So now in the history of democracy, we're going to talk about South Africa. Very different context from late Imperial Weimar Germany. So South Africa, of course, has a long history as a sort of a racial settler state like Australia or the United States. You know, there was a white minority divided between Afrikaans speakers and English speakers that had ruled the country in some form for some pieces of it as long as 400 years. So almost 400 years, a very long time. It had a history of slavery, not unlike the United States. And so by the 20th century, you have a situation where you have a white minority that was probably about a fifth of the population, with a much larger majority of African communities of all sorts. They were, of course, divided into Xhosa or Zulu or Pedi. They weren't a homogenous group. There was also a large number of what they called Asians. So these were people from South Asia, like Gandhi was part of this community. So that state had segregation in place already in the 20s. That system gets more and more entrenched. There's an election in 1948, and a group called the National Party, this was sort of an Afrikaans-speaking right-wing nationalist party, takes over by a very tiny margin, but uses that victory in 48 to build an incredibly comprehensive, hyper-racist, at times terror state, to control the other, you know, nearly 80% of the human beings who had no franchise, they had no vote, they weren't allowed to organize in any meaningful way. And that system gets more and more entrenched. You know, the ANC had been born back during the segregation era. It takes up arms in the early 60s because it feels, especially after Sharpeville, there's this massacre where a bunch of people are cut down for demonstrating against apartheid laws. Mandela decides we need to resist them. That armed resistance basically fails. They're all arrested. And as most people know, he and these leaders were put in Robben Island and he spent 27 years there. And for a while, the state has a lid on things, but then in the mid-70s, things explode again. There are these huge riots in Soweto. And by the 80s, the country was essentially ungovernable. And one of the real questions was this going to end in a massive bloodbath? Because that's what had happened in places like Portuguese Angola, to some degree Mozambique. Zimbabwe at that point was also embroiled in its own violence against settler rule. And things get bad enough by the late 80s that there's basically a coup against Botha, and this guy named de Klerk, who once spoke at Murray State, decided he needed to negotiate with Mandela, because if they didn't negotiate with someone soon, this whole thing was just going to dissolve into racist violence and be probably apocalyptic, which I have to admit many of us were expecting watching this from the outside. So, you know, Mandela had been out of touch with a lot of this for a long time. His wife Winnie Mandela had been sort of keeping the ANC alive, and there's this back and forth that takes many, many months between the government, whose back is to the wall, and the ANC, who in their own way, their back is to the wall too. The Cold War's over, so neither bloc is supporting either side in this anymore, so they're both starved for resources. And they come to a negotiated solution that I think one measure of it's at least quality maybe is that it didn't really please anyone. I'm sure you know that expression. It was not far enough for a lot of people, and it was way too far for others. It essentially left property alone, but granted real democracy. And in that first election, so apartheid is only abolished in 92, the franchise is created that includes everyone. In 94, that election, there was a tremendous amount of violence. About 12,000 people died during that election. But that election happened, there were lines that went for miles. And in that election, the ANC won a stunning and crushing majority, very clearly, which I guess didn't surprise everyone. But, you know, after this, what for them in many ways had been a 70-year struggle, they had now managed to break through and bring real democracy to a state that had denied this for the better part of 3.5 centuries.
Mandela, was he the perfect person for that period of time? Or did he just fit the template of someone who had these necessary qualities to lead at that time?
I'm really careful about great man history. Obviously, the ANC was a huge movement that was part of a much larger movement. The trade unions were involved, the churches, the Communist Party. But credit where credit is due, Mandela was uniquely positioned because he was still sort of the spiritual head of the ANC, and he was alive. The state had wanted to execute him, but the judges not let them do this. So he in prison, you know, I've been to this place. It's this really bleak Alcatraz-looking island with penguins on it out in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by sharks. And when he was there, spending time with these Afrikaner, mostly guards, I'm sure he didn't like them, but he really did at least learn to understand their mindset and developed a whole sort of ethos of be able to essentially coexist at all. And I'm not the first one to say this, but I think it really did create in him a sense that about the only way any of this was going to end was some sort of negotiated solution that at least took some white, especially Afrikaner sensibilities into account. And he, you know, he had in his career been a nonviolent activist, embraced violence, and then basically in many ways sort of rejected it again. He had, I think, by the end a very ambiguous and ambivalent attitude towards violence. It's one of the reasons he and his wife have a falling out, because she was still much more radical in a lot of ways. So, you know, it depends on what you think about ultimately that transition. If you think a negotiated solution was what needed to happen, then he absolutely was that person. And relentlessly and calmly and soberly and with empathy managed to sort of steer the ship. So, I mean, there were crazy things happening in that era in terms of violence between mobs of, it was called the Inkatha Freedom Party. These were like Zulu activists fighting the ANC. The government security forces was passing out weapons, trying to encourage violence. There were right-wing white militias forming. So it was a crazy time. And given that, to me, the miracle is that things turned out as well as they did.
You mentioned the internal pressures on de Klerk. Were there external pressures from countries like the United States in the way that we treated them diplomatically?
Up to this point, the United States has acted as a backstop for the apartheid regime, as had the British, by the way, and the West Germans. Reagan, Thatcher, and Kohl all viewed them as committed anti-communists. They were part of this anti-communist vanguard that was fighting communism in Angola, Namibia, Mozambique. So they'd gotten away literally with murder, essentially, with our tax dollars. Pressure here mounts with the divestment movement, starting at places like Duke, where students and universities start pulling their money out of South Africa, and that becomes a mass movement. The big shift really is with the end of the Cold War, though, because you don't necessarily have a huge change in regime from Reagan to Bush, but we're worried about other things at that point, and so our aid dries up. But so does Soviet aid. The Soviets had also been assisting the ANC, training them in Zambia and abroad, but that all dries up. So the Cold War, which had in many ways fueled this, its end also puts them both in a very, very difficult position where they have to get out of this as soon as possible.
Well, what are the final words that you have on the ANC and the end of apartheid?
You know, I think there are so many things about that place, and I live there, I took students there years ago, that remind me of our own country. And one of the things that was so amazing to watch is however many problems they had, and they are many, I'm sure you hear about them in the news, they were the most politically engaged and sort of active and awake people I'd ever met in my life. You know, they made it really clear to me that they were aware of the problems they had, they were engaged, they were trying to work on them. You know, ultimately, I walk away feeling in some ways almost embarrassed for us for how much easier in some ways we have it, though we have some of the same problems they do. But how more unplugged we are and how less agitated, I guess is the word I would use. South Africans, they feel very strongly about these things. And they, even in the post-struggle, that's what they call the campaign against apartheid, even after the struggle, they remain incredibly engaged in a way that I was kind of jealous of, to be honest.